Hey guys, this is Vyom Joshi with Superior North. Welcome back to my channel. Today we will be talking about a stock that was suggested by a subscriber. That stock is MasterCard. MasterCard is a global leader in electronic payments, and today we will be reviewing the company's 10K annual report to get a better idea of its business profile. We will be looking at the company's key ratios, performing a discounted free cash flow DCF analysis to find the intrinsic value of the company, and finally do an expected rate of return calculation to see if you were to invest in MasterCard at the current stock price, what kind of return can we expect on this investment? So let's dive in and look at MasterCard. Hey guys, let's start off by looking at the Form 10K, which is the annual report that MasterCard filed with the SEC. This is for the fiscal year that ended December 31, 2020. And on page 6 of the report, the company provides a business overview. MasterCard states that it is a technology company in the global payment industry that connects consumers, financial institutions, merchants, governments, digital partners, businesses, and other organizations worldwide, enabling them to use electronic forms of payments instead of cash and checks. MasterCard then provides us an idea about how each transaction involves four participants: the account holder, issuer, merchant, and acquirer. And MasterCard is the middleman between the issuer and the acquirer. MasterCard states that it generates revenue from assessing its customers based on the gross dollar volume of activity on the products that carry its brands, from the fees it charges to its customers for providing transaction switching, and from other payment-related products and services. In other words, MasterCard generates revenue by charging financial institutions that issue MasterCard-branded payment products a fee based on gross dollar volume of activity. Next, on page 104 of the report, the company provides us the segment reporting. MasterCard states that it has one reportable operating segment, which is its payment solutions segment. MasterCard also claims that revenue generated in the United States was approximately 33% of its total revenue in 2020, and no individual country other than the United States generated more than 10% of its total revenue in 2020. MasterCard did not have any individual customer that generated greater than 10% of its net revenue in 2020. Said differently, majority of MasterCard's revenue comes from its customers in the United States. Next, the company provides us a breakdown of its geographic locations of the company's property, equipment, and right-of-use assets. About 62% of its total assets in 2020 were in the United States, and 38% of its assets in 2020 were in other countries. Now that we understand that MasterCard makes majority of its revenue by charging banks fees for issuing MasterCard-branded cards, let's review the company's fundamentals by focusing on its key ratios. Hey guys, now let's review MasterCard's key ratios. I'm on Morningstar, looking at MasterCard. Under key ratios, we have the financials. The first item on the list is the revenue. The revenue is the top line of the income statement. This is the amount of money that the company brings from its sales. Back in 2011, MasterCard's revenue was about $6.7 billion, and for the year 2020, it was $15.3 billion. MasterCard's revenue grew every year from 2011 through 2019. The company did see a drop in revenue in 2020, primarily because people used fewer credit cards and had fewer transactions overall in 2020 amid the pandemic. Next is the operating income. The operating income is the amount of money that's left with the company once it has paid for the cost of goods and operating expenses. Back in 2011, the company's operating income was $2.7 billion, and for the year 2020, it was $8.1 billion. The company's operating income follows a similar trend as the company's revenue. After that, looking at the net income, the net income is the bottom line of the income statement. This is the amount of money that's left with the company once it has paid for the cost of goods, operating expenses, non-operating expenses, interest on its debt obligations, and taxes. Back in 2011, MasterCard's net income was $1.9 billion, and for the year 2020, it was about $6.4 billion. When we look at the past 10-year trend, we can see that the net income's trend is similar to what we see with operating income and the revenue. The only unique year for net income was back in 2017 when we saw a dip in net income. This was primarily because of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act that got enacted, leading to MasterCard having to pay higher taxes for that calendar year. Next, looking at dividends per share. Back in 2011, MasterCard paid about 6 cents per share as dividend, and for the year 2020, it paid about $2.04 per share as dividend. Over the past 10 years, the company's dividends have been increasing. Next, looking at the shares outstanding. Back in 2011, MasterCard had 1,284 million shares outstanding, and for the year 2020, it had 1,006 million shares outstanding. Over the past 10 years, the company's shares outstanding number have been decreasing. This is a good sign, as it tells us that the company has been buying back its shares, and this process of buybacks actually helps increase the existing shareholders' ownership within the company. Next, looking at the book value per share. The book value is what we get when we subtract the company's total liabilities from its total assets. Back in 2011, the company's book value was about $4.71 per share, and for the year 2020, it was about $5.82 per share. Over the past 10 years, the company's book value has stayed fairly consistent. It's good to see that over the past 10 years, the company's book value has always stayed positive, which tells us that the company has always had more assets than its liabilities. Finally, looking at the free cash flow. The free cash flow is what we get when we subtract the company's capital spending from its operating cash flow. Back in 2011, the company's free cash flow was about $2.5 billion, and for the year 2020, it was about $6.5 billion. Over the past 10 years, the company's free cash flow has stayed positive and is trending upwards. I will be using the past 10 years of free cash flow for my expected rate of return calculation, and I will be using the 2020 figure of $6.516 billion for my DCF, discounted free cash flow analysis. Now let's look at the profitability of the company, focusing on the net margin. The net margin is the ratio of the company's bottom line to its top line, so it compares the company's net income to its revenue. Back in 2011, the company's net margin was about 28.39%, and for the year 2020, it was about 41.90%. What this means is every $100 that the company made in 2020, by the time it paid for its cost of goods, operating expenses, non-operating expenses, interest on its debt obligations, and taxes, it had $41.90 left as pure profit. Next, looking at the return on equity. The return on equity is the ratio of the company's net income to its shareholders' equity. Warren Buffett prefers to only invest in securities who have a return on equity of 8% or greater every year for the past 10 years. Back in 2011, MasterCard's return on equity was about 34.43%, and for the year 2020, it was about 104.38%. Anytime we have such high return on equity numbers, that is a sign of caution, because it tells us that the company has taken on some liabilities. Because if we think about the equation assets being equal to liabilities plus equity, if the liabilities go up, my equity has to go down. And when we compare net income to equity, and that equity is a tiny number, we're bound to get a high inflated return on equity number. Next is return on invested capital. The return on invested capital gives an idea of how good the management is at allocating the company's capital and getting a return on that investment. Back in 2011, the company's return on invested capital was about 34%, and for the year 2020, it was about 39.41%. MasterCard's weighted average cost of capital, which is also known as the company's hurdle rate, is about 9%. And since the return on invested capital is a lot greater than the company's weighted average cost of capital, it tells us that the company's management is creating value for its shareholders. Finally, looking at the interest coverage. The interest coverage is a ratio of the company's income to its interest obligations. So it gives us an idea of how many times can the company pay off its interest obligations using its income in that calendar year. Back in 2011, the company's interest coverage was about 110 times, and for the year 2020, it's about 21 times. Benjamin Graham, the father of value investing, preferred to only invest in securities who had interest coverage of 5 times or higher. Next, looking at the financial health of the company, focusing on the liquidity ratios, the first item on the list is the current ratio. The current ratio compares the company's current assets to its current liabilities. Ideally, we want to invest in companies who have a current ratio greater than 1.5. Back in 2011, the company's current ratio was about 1.84, and for the year 2020, it was about 1.61. Next, looking at the quick ratio. The quick ratio is similar to the current ratio, except we disregard the inventory component. In other words, quick ratio is equal to current assets minus inventory divided by current liabilities. Ideally, we want to invest in companies who have a quick ratio of at least 1.0 or higher. Back in 2011, the company's quick ratio was about 1.51, and for the year 2020, it was 1.26. Both the current and quick ratio point out that the company has more than enough current assets to fulfill its current liabilities. Next, looking at the financial leverage. The financial leverage is the ratio of the company's total assets to its shareholders' equity. A higher financial leverage number indicates that the company has taken on more liabilities. In other words, more of the company's assets are financed via liabilities. Back in 2011, the company's financial leverage was 1.82, and for the year 2020, it was about 5.25. We can see that over the past 10 years, the company's financial leverage has been increasing. Next, looking at the debt to equity ratio. This ratio compares the company's total debt to its shareholders' equity. Ideally, we want to invest in companies who have a debt to equity of less than 1.0. Back in 2014, the company's debt to equity was 0.22, and for the year 2020, it was 1.88. MasterCard's financial leverage and debt to equity ratio is a lot higher than its competitor Visa. However, it's a lot better than its competitors American Express and Discover. Now let's review MasterCard's efficiency ratios, focusing on its day sales outstanding. This number gives an idea of how many days go by from the day the company recognizes its sales to the day it actually receives cash for its service rendered. Back in 2011, MasterCard's day sales outstanding was about 53 days, and for the year 2020, it's about 118 days.
Ideally, we want to invest in companies whose day sales outstanding number is staying fairly consistent. An increasing day sales outstanding number tells us that the company is being aggressive with its accounting, as it is recognizing its sales quicker so that it can show better revenue numbers on its income statement. Next, looking at the payables period, this number tells us how many days does MasterCard take to pay its suppliers. Back in 2012, the company took about 83 days to pay its suppliers, and for the year 2020, it took about 49 days to pay its suppliers. Finally, looking at the receivables turnover, this number gives an idea of how efficient the company is at collecting its receivables. Back in 2011, the company's receivable turnover was at 6.87, and for the year 2020, it was 3.10. Ideally, we want to see the company's receivable turnover to be staying steady or increasing. A decreasing turnover ratio indicates that the company is becoming less efficient at collecting its receivables. So we can see that MasterCard was a lot more efficient at collecting its receivables back in 2011 than it is right now. Now let's compare the company's current valuation to that of the S&P 500. The S&P 500 is the aggregate of the top 500 companies in the United States. The first item on the list is the price-to-earnings ratio. MasterCard's PE is at 58, whereas S&P 500 is at 28.9. MasterCard's price-to-book is at 57.4, whereas S&P 500 is at 4.1. MasterCard price-to-sales is at 24.3, whereas S&P 500 is at 3.0. Next is price-to-cash flow. MasterCard is at 51.5, whereas S&P 500 is at 17.1. And finally, the dividend yield. MasterCard has a dividend yield of 0.4%, whereas S&P 500 has a dividend yield of 1.6%. On all these valuation metrics, we can see that MasterCard is clearly overvalued to the S&P 500. Hey guys, now let's look at the discounted free cash flow DCF analysis from MasterCard. Over here, I pasted the company's 2020 free cash flow number that I got from Morningstar, which is $6,516 million. I'm using an annual growth rate of free cash flow to be 10%. What this means is I expect MasterCard's free cash flow to grow at 10% every year for the next 10 years. I'm using a discount rate of 10%. What this means is I expect to get a 10% return on this investment. I'm using an annual growth rate of 5%. What this means is from the 10-year mark into perpetuity, I expect MasterCard's free cash flow to grow at 5%. The company has 1,006 million shares outstanding and has a long-term debt of $12,023 million. I got this number from the company's balance sheet. After taking into account all these inputs, we get the intrinsic value to be about $189 per share. When we compare this to the current stock price of $371 per share, we can see that the current stock is trading about 2 times the company's intrinsic value. The way we calculate this intrinsic value is we look at what the free cash flows would be every year for the next 10 years. We sum up all those free cash flows, which come out to about $65 billion. Then we look at what the free cash flows would be from the 10-year mark into perpetuity. We sum all those up to get the intrinsic value to be about $202 billion. From this number, we subtract the long-term debt and divide by the shares outstanding to get the intrinsic value per share to be about $189 per share. Now, if we disregard the perpetuity component, in other words, if we think that MasterCard is only going to grow for the next 10 years and then it'll cease to exist, then we get the intrinsic value without the perpetuity to be about $53 per share. And if we disregard both the debt and the perpetuity, then we get the intrinsic value without the debt and perpetuity to be about $65 per share. Finally, if we drop the company's discount rate to 9%, which is the company's weighted average cost of capital, also known as its hurdle rate, then we get the intrinsic value to be about $244 per share, which when compared to the current stock price would still mean that the company's current stock is trading about 1.5 times its intrinsic value. Hey guys, now let's look at the expected rate of return calculation for MasterCard. Over here, I pasted the past 10 years of free cash flows that I got from Morningstar. All the numbers here are in millions of US dollars. This is the yearly free cash flow trend that we get over the years. All the numbers are positive and we can see that the trend is upwards. Next, looking at the future data and predictions, I'm assuming that there's a 40% likelihood that MasterCard's free cash flow will grow at 10%. There's a 45% likelihood that its free cash flow will grow at 6%. And a 15% likelihood that its free cash flow will grow at 4%. These are the potential free cash flow rates that we get into the future. After taking into account the numbers of shares outstanding, which is at 1,006 million shares, at the current stock price of about $371 per share, we can expect to get an annual return of about 0.2% on this investment. What this means is if you were to purchase a stock of MasterCard at the current stock price of $371 per share and hold it through 2075, then we can expect to get an annual return of about 0.2% on this investment. Hey guys, now let's wrap it all up. Reviewed the company's annual report and got a business overview of MasterCard. We saw that more than 30% of the company's revenue comes from within the United States. The company's revenue, operating income, as well as net income over the past 10 years have mostly been increasing. The company has been hiking its dividends and buying back its shares, which indicate that the company's management is shareholder friendly. The company's return on equity has been greater than 8% every year for the past 10 years. However, the highly inflated return on equity number is a sign of caution, as it indicates that the company's liabilities are increasing. The company's return on invested capital is greater than its weighted average cost of capital, which tells us that the management is creating shareholder value. Next, we saw that the company's interest coverage has been greater than 5 times every year for the past 10 years. After that, we looked at the company's liquidity ratios, where we saw that the company's current and quick ratio both point out that the company has more than enough current assets to fulfill its current liabilities. When we looked at the company's financial leverage and debt-to-equity ratio, we saw that over the past 10 years, those numbers have been increasing, which is a bad sign as it indicates that the company is becoming more leveraged. However, holistically, those numbers are comparable to its competitors. After that, we saw that on all the valuation metrics, MasterCard was overvalued to the S&P 500. When we performed the discounted free cash flow DCF analysis using a 10% discount rate, we got the intrinsic value to be about $189 per share. And when we use a 9% discount rate, which is in line with the company's weighted average cost of capital, we get the intrinsic value to be about $244 per share. In both the cases, MasterCard's intrinsic value is a lot lower than its current stock price. After that, when we calculated the expected rate of return, we found out that if we were to invest in MasterCard at the current stock price of about $371 per share, we can expect to get an annual return of about 0.2% on this investment. Overall, MasterCard's income statement numbers are pretty. However, its balance sheet numbers show that its liabilities are increasing. With the rise of blockchain technology, the need for a middleman like MasterCard seems counterintuitive. Lastly, MasterCard's intrinsic value and its low expected rate of return both point out that the company lacks a margin of safety. Hence, I would shy away from this investment. Hey guys, that is all I had for you this week. Hopefully you found this video on MasterCard interesting. If you like this content, please do like, share, comment, and subscribe. And if you have any suggestions as to which stock I should review next, please leave it in the comment section below. I will greatly appreciate it. Thank you.